When there's a trade war on, the world's biggest container shipping company gets closely watched. Denmark's Maersk actually beat expectations on Thursday. Earnings were up 17% to nearly $1.4 billion. It benefited from higher freight rates and lower costs. The firm says it still expects container traffic to grow as much as 3% this year.
Researchers at the University of Singapore are calling this smart clothing, and they say it could save on that precious battery. Because the invention allows radio waves like Bluetooth and Wi-Fi to glide across the clothing between wearable devices, instead of radiating outwards in all directions. That means sensors and wearable technologies such as Apple Watches and AirPods can establish stronger connections faster and save energy.
Scientists are calling this a punch in the gut. They've found tiny bits of plastic deep in Arctic ice, showing the threat plastic pollution poses to marine life in some of the most remote waters on the planet. A US-led team of scientists found the microplastic in ice taken from Lancaster Sound, a stretch of the Canadian Arctic so isolated that they hoped it might be sheltered from pollution. But there it was, beads and filaments of all different sizes, surprising them with its abundance and scale.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's August the 16th. It's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We finally made it to Friday. It seems like a long week, doesn't it? I know in the markets we've had just one day after the next of drama, so investors, I'm sure, are glad to see Friday as well. We're going to get into some of the numbers and a little bit of analysis this morning. We're happy to have Paul Nolte back with us. Paul will join us momentarily for our first conversation of the morning here. Paul from Kingsview Asset Management. A little bit later in the program, Brian Summers will be along. From skiff.com, we'll talk to Brian about the latest rule for United Airlines pilots about drinking, when they need to cut it off if they're going to be flying the next day. We'll have Brian at about 5:38 this morning. Of course, we'll also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the 5 o'clock hour. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after stocks managed to rebound a bit yesterday, following some huge losses this week on Wall Street. A better-than-expected retail report helped stocks bounce back from the worst day of 2019. The Dow Jones Industrials finished up nearly 100 points. The S&P gained 7 points. The NASDAQ fell 7 points. As we look at the futures market this morning, we're looking for a pop this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 242 points, up nearly a full percent this morning. S&P futures up nearly a full percent as well. NASDAQ futures are up 92 points, nearly a percent and a quarter. As we look around the rest of the world, in Europe, markets are in the green as well. In London, Germany, and France, up anywhere from a third to three quarters of a percent in France. And in Asia, markets are generally in the green as well. The Nikkei ending the day in Japan up just a fraction. And in Hong Kong, markets up nearly a percent, 238 points. And China up nearly a third. Oil in the U.S. is at $55.44 a barrel, which is up nearly a dollar a barrel. As we begin this morning, President Trump says he must be reelected to preserve a strong economy in the U.S. During a rally in New Hampshire, Trump warned that 401ks will, in his words, go down the tubes if he loses next year. He added, whether you love me or hate me, you've got to vote for me. Trump portrayed Democrats as radicals who want to tear the country apart. He said Dems like to rage and resist. We'll talk to Paul a little bit this morning about how the economy might play into an election or re-election of somebody next year as we see this up and down movement on the stock market and concerns about global growth and U.S. growth as well. Walmart stock is soaring after the world's biggest company posted second quarter earnings, beating Wall Street estimates. Wall Street shares closed up 6.5% yesterday. Walmart earned $1.27 a share on revenue of $130.4 billion in the April to June quarter. Both figures are better than analysts forecast. Walmart's e-commerce business is continuing to grow as well. E-commerce sales at Walmart jumped 37% in the second quarter. The Department of Justice Antitrust Division asking United Technologies and Raytheon for more information about its proposed $120 billion merger It's the second time the DOJ has asked the companies for additional information. Regulators are looking at the merger of the companies that would consolidate the aerospace and defense companies. The merger is expected to be completed if given federal approval in the early part of next year. Let's begin this morning with Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's a senior portfolio manager and SVP. And Paul, good morning. Welcome back to the program. We missed you. You're off for a couple of weeks.
I was off for a couple of weeks, and I'm not used to this darkness here in the morning. We were up in Alaska, where it's always sunny.
Yeah, you said that the sunset there is what, midnight?
It was 10, 11 o'clock, where it got a little dark and dusky, and then 2 o'clock you started seeing the sun come back up again. So they're losing 7 minutes of sunlight a day right now. So they're getting into the darkness. But it was a very, very fun trip.
Well, we're glad to have you back, and I hope you had a good time and didn't deal with the markets or portfolios at all.
We peeked in on the markets a little bit, and again, it's been more of the same, and we saw it again this week. We've seen it the last few weeks, where it's all about trade, and it's all about, you know, what's happening with trade. Are we having an agreement? Are we talking? Are we not talking? Are we putting tariffs on, taking them off? And the markets are reacting to each tweet that may come out, any news item from anybody in the administration or from China. And that's really what's driving this market. Underneath everything is trade is having an impact on stocks and earnings. We're hearing it from companies. We heard it from Cisco yesterday. We've heard it from other companies as we've gone through this earnings season. It is impacting earnings, and it is impacting companies as far as should we invest in more plant and equipment, et cetera. And a lot of people, a lot of companies are holding off on that because they're not sure how this is all going to shake out. And those have long-run implications, so that even if we get a deal tomorrow, we're going to have the residual effect of the last year, year and a half with these tariffs for the next year to 2 years, as even if we pass an agreement today.
The president mentioned in the opening, says if you don't elect him, 401ks are going to go down the tubes. They're kind of doing that right now, aren't they?
A little bit. I mean, all right, so the market's down 6, 7%, 8% or so from the peak that we saw at the end of July. So, all of 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, the markets were at all-time highs, and here we are 2 weeks later, and the world is coming to an end. This is the market breathing. It may be asthmatic, but it is breathing. We normally see 5 to 7 to 10% corrections a couple times a year, so it shouldn't be a shock that that's what's happening. Whether this morphs into something more, hard to say at this point, but again, we freaked out earlier this year when the markets went down. We freaked out at Christmas time, and we've seen the markets rise 20% from the Christmas lows to the highs. Again, it's happening very sporadically, and it's happening in a very strange way. But it's not unusual to see the markets come down like that, and it gets everybody a little bit more nervous, and then the dust will settle, and we start to see the markets rally again.
It feels like something's different this time, though, because we saw, first of all, the inverted yield curve. We can have a debate about that if you want. And it just feels different this time, like there's more, like something more is happening.
It's been that way for a while, and that's why I said it's a revolving around trade. It's revolving around slower growth globally. Germany is struggling at this point. Japan has been struggling for a while. China is slowing down. The U.S. is slowing down. Are we in a recession? Not yet. The inverted yield curve, everybody's pointed to, said, well, there's a marker. That means we're going into a recession. And the historical would say, yes, we're going into a recession. And that's the key word, is going. We're not there yet. And if you look at the history of what happens to the equity markets after the yield curve inverts, you can see the markets rally anywhere between another 5 to almost as much as 20% from the time that it inverts before we get into a recession. So it's not necessarily the best time to be saying, okay, let's sell everything, put it under our mattress, and just wait. But you do want to be cautious going forward. And as we've talked about over the last few months or so, we've been taking money out of the equity markets as the markets rally, putting it into the bonds. And, we're looking around today saying, well, okay, is this the bottom for at least the end of the summer, or do we have a little bit more to go? And we're seeing a little bit of a rally today, more of a relief rally than anything else, given the big sell-off that we had earlier in the week. But I don't think it's time necessarily yet to be super defensive at this point.
But it is time to kind of have your eye on it, right?
Absolutely.
I saw a couple of the big houses this week say time to prepare. Get your money in order, finances in order.
Well, and you've got the window is probably anywhere between 6 months and 2 years. So, I mean, even in 2005, the yield curve inverted at the end of 2005. You had 2 years before the stuff really hit the fan. So that's what I'm saying. You don't have to hurry up and do it yesterday. But it is something that you want to start looking at and start looking at the portfolio and say, okay, if the equity markets go down 20%, 30%, How do I feel about that? And then take a look at that in your portfolio and say, okay, I really can't handle that at this point. And I need to make some adjustments and use the rallies that we're going to ultimately see to start to take down that risk to something that's a little bit more comfortable.
And the question is, where are the places to make money? Is it the bond market? Is it gold? Is it where?
Well, actually, you know, what's interesting is gold is doing much better. This is the first time that we've seen gold rally consistently in the last 10 years. It generally is an anti-dollar play, so it moves opposite the dollar. The dollar has been very strong for the last couple of years, so gold has been weak. That relationship may be changing here a little bit. So gold makes some sense, but I wouldn't go crazy with it. We still like short to intermediate term treasuries. And many would argue that they're very, very low and they're destined to go, the yields are destined to go higher, which means bond prices down. Our argument is that if we do go into a recession, yields will go that much lower. It was interesting. We heard comments earlier this week from former Fed Chair Greenspan saying, well, there's nothing magical about zero, meaning we could go below zero. We've seen the entire yield curve for Germany all below zero. So the 30-year bond was yielding below zero, negative interest rate. Sweden the same way. We've got $15 trillion of sovereign debt globally that is yielding less than zero. Do we get there? I'm not going to say no, but that possibility exists.
Paul, I'm curious to get your thoughts on potential interest rate cuts now moving forward. What is everyone betting on?
A lot more. Right now, they're betting on 3, maybe 4 more interest rate cuts, which essentially at low interest rates now at roughly 2.25%. Would get us very close to zero Fed funds rate again. So we're going back to the policies that we had 2009 through 2016, 17. And so the thought is that we're going to be cutting rates aggressively. There's a lot of discussion. There's better than 60% chance now that they cut 50 basis points at their September meeting. The markets are starting to price that in. As they expect the economy in the U.S. to slow down due to the tariffs, and it becomes kind of a chicken and the egg argument. We saw it last week when the Fed cut rates, and the next day Trump put additional tariffs on Japan or on China. And the Fed is cutting rates due to the impact of tariffs. So we get the circular argument. Why are they cutting rates? Well, because they're putting tariffs on. And when they cut interest rates, Trump feels confident that he can then put more additional tariffs on. So we get into that circular discussion with tariffs and the Fed.
Yeah, or it could be that Trump's sole purpose is to lower interest rates. Here's a guy and his family that have a lot of debt. Mm-hmm. They would benefit by lower interest rates.
Sure. And it's true with companies as a whole, and we saw it with a lot of corporations. They've loaded up on a lot of debt. The individual is actually in much better shape. They've actually cut down the amount of debt that they have in this low interest rate environment.
Yesterday, I don't know if you were watching, I believe it was on CNBC, they talked about GE.
Yes.
And about also about debt as well. Mm-hmm. All these companies have leveraging their debt.
Mm-hmm.
It is a potentially big problem if this is causing their companies to potentially fail.
It is, and here's where it comes into play, is can I turn my debt over? So as my bonds mature, I have to pay that out. And what a lot of companies are doing is saying, well, I got $1 million in debt that's coming due today. I have to pay the bondholders their $1 million. I don't have it right now in the drawer. So I'm going to go out and borrow a million for another 5 years. So basically, I'm borrowing for 5 years to pay off the debt holders today. And so I'm rolling that debt. I'm constantly rolling it. Where it becomes important is if I no longer have confidence in GE's ability or anybody's ability to pay off that debt, I'm going to require a significantly higher interest rate to take that debt out 5-10 years. And if I can't afford to pay it as a company or even as an individual, then I'm in a rough place. And the other part of it is the assumption has been over the last few years, what happens if interest rates rise and now I have to refinance that debt at significantly higher interest rates? Right now, that's not an issue, but that is something else that's going on. And then the third thing is, am I, from a company perspective, am I generating enough cash to take care of my debt? So we look at cash flow from operations, and we take a look at what the debt costs are, and is the cash that I'm generating from my company enough to cover that those debt payments? And if not, we have some problems.
We don't have enough time to get into it, but folks, if you're listening, go to CNBC.com and see the interview. The upshot of it was there. GE may have been misreporting some of its financial statements over the years.
They're talking about it in the same light as Enron and WorldCom back in the early 2000s. I'm not sure that that's the case. There's a strong case against that, but somebody is making those allegations. And so that's part of the reason why the stock was down significantly yesterday.
So should we join the optimism on Wall Street today? Are there buying opportunities? What would you do today?
There's always buying opportunities. And really, when you take a look at the markets, you know, again, as we talked about, we've got a window probably of a year to 2 years before we really have to hunker down. So I think it makes sense to take a look at 401ks, take a look at your investments. Where you have a fair amount of risk or where you're concerned if the markets do drop by 20-30% at some point, that number is much bigger than what you would like to see in your portfolio, then it probably makes sense to use days like today where the markets are rallying, shift a little bit of money toward the cash or toward short-term bonds to be a little bit more defensive. It's, again, it's not something that you have to hurry up and do, but be cognizant that you need to be probably looking at the portfolio a little bit more often than you have been, and adjusting it, being a little bit more defensive. So within the stock market, consumer staples and some of those types of names, healthcare has gotten very inexpensive at this point. Those tend to hold up pretty well as the market declines, and they provide at least a good return in dividends as well as you go through that the recession.
Very good, Paul. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Well, I'm back in the office, so they can always drop me an email, and the email is pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and we'll continue the conversation there.
All right, very good. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, Senior Portfolio Manager and SVP there, is with us every Friday here in the Opening Bell.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of the Opening Bell. Conversation switches now to the business of aviation and travel. Brian Summers is Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com and joins us this morning from Los Angeles via Skype. Brian, let's begin with United Airlines. News about the company this week, a new rule about pilots and when they can drink alcohol.
This is an interesting one, Steve. It just happened this week. As you say, United Airlines has told pilots they'll have to wait 12 hours between their last sip of alcohol and when they report for duty to work. So that's an hour, hour and a half before the flight. If you're wondering why now, I'm guessing there's a pretty easy answer to that, although United isn't saying why. People may remember within the last 10 days, a couple of United Airlines pilots were arrested in Glasgow, Scotland, for having too much alcohol in their system to fly. Now, the United Kingdom does have stricter limits than the United States, but nonetheless, there were two arrests. One United Airlines pilot was charged, and you know, it really hasn't been great press for the airline. So about a week after that happened, United changed its rules. In the industry, they call this bottle to throttle, which is kind of an interesting way to describe it. But one thing is that I did speak to Delta, Southwest, American. They still only have an 8-hour rule. So United is going to be stricter in terms of alcohol consumption or at least timing of it than its top main competitors. I will say this, though, people may remember United and Continental merged at this point, almost a decade ago. Before the merger, United had a 12-hour bottle to throttle rule. So we're really just going back in time here to what it used to be.
Brian, as with everything that we talk about, is this really a huge problem given the number of pilots that are involved here? It just feels like these incidents, when they happen, are high profile.
Yeah, I mean, each major airline has, 10,000 pilots. We do hear about this at every airline once or twice a year, which frankly is once or twice too many. But when you talk to the airlines, when you talk to the unions, they don't think that this is that big of a deal. They say that their pilots are professionals. I agree with them. There are certainly a few people out there who may have problems, and it's not good when this happens, Steve. But the incidents are few and far between.
Is there anything passengers can do if we get on a plane to determine whether or not our pilot's been drinking or not, or even our flight attendant for that matter?
Yeah, I mean, certainly you have the opportunity to say, stop. I don't feel comfortable here. I'm worried about my pilot. I'm worried about my flight attendant. I will caution you that airlines take this extremely seriously, right? So sometimes people on the airplane, and frankly, they might be joking. They might be having a good time. And my understanding is if a pilot is accused of being drunk or even close to drunk on the job, even if it's a joke, the airline stops everything, and I think that they call somebody and they try to figure out the situation. So it's not something that you ever want to joke about on a plane, but if you do believe that you're in a situation, yes, you should call somebody's attention to it.
These pilots, when they do get into trouble like this, is this the end of their career? I'm guessing they're in pretty serious trouble.
Yeah, it's funny, Steve. Nobody really talks about what happens after these situations. But yes, I believe that this is generally not good for a pilot's career. There are some pilots who go get help and through some assistance from their union end up flying again. But many don't, or at least they don't fly again for the airline that was employing them at the time.
Brian, Southwest Airlines wants to add more flights to in Denver. Talk to us a little bit about the significance of this and how it might impact all the rest of us.
Yeah, Southwest has about 200 daily flights in Denver right now. They've said that they want to add about 100 more within the next several years. To do that, they will need more gates. United Airlines, Chicago's hometown airline, is still the huge presence in Denver this summer. I think they have about 500 flights a day. Newish United President Scott Kirby has really doubled down in Denver. Denver is a really great place to have an airport, right? It's in the middle of the country, which helps with connecting passengers. It's a very good economy right now. There's some really nice tech stuff happening there. So the tech companies are going to and from Denver. Some of them are based there. And then, believe it or not, Steve, we think about Denver and snowstorms, but and the weather is actually pretty good generally in Denver to run a connecting hub operation. So that helps a lot. And anybody who's been to the Denver airport knows that it's literally built in the middle of nowhere. So unlike in Chicago, where you have neighborhood groups who are worried about airport expansion and you only have so much space, in Denver they have space upon space upon space. So really good airport. And you may be wondering how Southwest and United could coexist there, especially if Southwest continues to expand. But frankly, they do it in Chicago, and then Chicago, the two of them have to worry about American, which has a hub there as well. So as long as the Denver economy stays pretty good, I think that there's definitely room for United and Southwest to coexist.
Does this mean for those of us who fly on Southwest that we will perhaps get more connecting flights through Denver or cheaper flights?
It's possible that you could get cheaper flights in the future. As we talk about always on the show, more capacity generally leads to lower prices eventually. But we do have to remember that what Southwest is doing right now is basically talking through the media about what the airline wants. Southwest does this lot. Airlines can only grow at these airports if there are gates available. There often aren't gates available. You know how hard it was in Chicago for these airlines to get more gates, which they did recently, but it took many, many years. So there's a lot of negotiations that have to go on before Southwest is going to get the extra gates they need to fly 100 more flights a day. But, you know, I think it could happen.
Brian, this week, a couple of times this week, we've been reporting on the situation in Hong Kong with the airport pretty much closing down for a couple of days, at least a couple of mornings this week. Talk to us about the situation there, how it might impact all the rest of us, and how it's impacting one big airline.
Yeah, the situation in Hong Kong, especially earlier this week on Monday and Tuesday, was not good. People might have seen pictures and videos of protesters rioting in the airport and then riot police coming in. And it's just not the type of thing that you want to see. I mean, I don't know how many of our listeners are going to and from Hong Kong. But, you know, Hong Kong Airport is one of the world's largest, biggest connecting hubs. It's like going to London or Toronto or Tokyo. I mean, everybody just assumes that that is a very safe, modern airport. And to see those pictures this week was just horrific for a lot of people. As you and I speak right now, things seem to have gotten back to relatively normal. I suspect that it's going to stay that way. I did speak this week with the senior executive for Cathay Pacific in the Americas. Cathay Pacific is the airline based in Hong Kong. They're gigantic. They fly all over the United States. And he frankly expected that the government would not allow any more protesters at the airport. I mean, this is sort of China. They have that ability. And he seemed to think that it was going to be over for a while. Cathay Pacific's business will probably suffer for a bit. But they're a huge, renowned, historic airline, and I imagine that they'll get things back to normal relatively soon. I'm not an expert in politics. I don't know if, you know, the rest of the situation is going to be resolved, but I think that the airport situation is going to be fixed relatively soon.
All right. Brian, good conversation as always. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers from Skift.com. Make sure you follow Skift at Skift on Twitter and Brian Summers on Twitter at Brian Summers. And there's some developing news just as we're ending this conversation with Brian this morning. Cathay Pacific's CEO has resigned this morning after company was blamed for some involvement in some of those anti-China protests in Hong Kong.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures up nearly 240 points, nearly a full percent. Let's check in on agriculture and commodities this morning. Orion Samuelson is with us. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you. And in the grain market, soybean market at the Board of Trade, they, of course, have been trading overnight, and they're all higher this morning. Wheat is up 2.25 cents a bushel. Corn is up 3.5 cents a bushel. Soybeans are up 5.25 cents a bushel. So we are trading a little higher, but the commodity market certainly has not been as volatile as the stock market this week. Golly. What a week.
Yeah, absolutely. You've actually had fun this week, right? You've been at some state fairs and county fairs.
Well, I thought of you because I had a lot of good food. I had pork burgers and corn dogs and all that sort of thing. And if you haven't gotten out to a fair yet, you better. But, yeah, we were there on Tuesday at the Illinois State Fair. Max Armstrong was at the Indiana State Fair this week. And both of those fairs are still going. The Indiana Fair goes through Sunday, the Illinois Fair through Sunday, and the Iowa State Fair goes through Sunday. So you still have the opportunity to get out there. The one other thing I wanted to comment on August 5th, when the Chinese government said it would no longer buy U.S. agricultural products from the United States. Well, I first went to China in 1976. I've been back about 9 times, and I've discovered tough to believe what they say and even tougher to figure out what the numbers should be, because China made its biggest purchase of U.S. pork in 7 weeks last week, as the world's largest pork consumer bought 10,211 tons of U.S. pork between August 2 and 8 for shipment in 2019 because of the ravage of the African swine fever. So, and they also bought some sorghum and they also took shipment on some soybeans. The U.S. exporters shipped 599,000 tons of previously purchased soybeans to China in the week ended August 8th, making it the largest week of shipment since late February.
You know, this whole trade thing, it's really hard to know what's real and what's not, isn't it?
It really is, because of the scope of agriculture in China, and then because of the way they control information. So, yes.
All right. Orion, thank you. Have a great weekend.
And the same to you. Get out to a county or state fair.
Orion Samuelson with us this morning. Of course, make sure you listen to the morning show tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, August the 16th. Housing starts for July, due out today. Home building industry analysts expect to see a slight rise over June. Experts are forecasting an annual rate of 1.272 million starts last month. That would be a 1.5% increase over June and would more than make up ground lost with June's disappointing results. Also today, consumer sentiment report and on the earnings calendar, Deere and Company reporting quarterly earnings. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, August the 16th.